And a very good evening to you. How you doing? I don't have any news at the moment. My news bureau is experiencing serious technical difficulties with their website. So I've got no news. You probably think that's good. Well and good, says you. I understand. It is exactly 5 o'clock. Thursday it is, the 4th of February 2021. My name is Richie Allen. Thanks for finding me today. You can join in with me. You can speak to me today through Twitter. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter, at BBG Richie. I genuinely love hearing from you, so do share your opinions with me. Don't scream into the darkness. Don't scream into empty rooms. You can scream at me today. Lots to talk about. Flying solo, so it's just me and you, okay?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now that I think of it, I better turn on Twitter, hadn't I, so I can read your tweets. I had a busy old day today. When I ask you how was your day, I genuinely mean it. You can share with me the most exciting or the most mundane things that happened to you today. Let's have a more relaxed Richie Allen Radio Show today. Tell me whatever you want to tell me. I do have lots of news and some interesting analysis, I think, lined up for you as well, for as long as I am with you this afternoon. Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from a pretty chilly but mercifully dry Salford. Chilly but mercifully dry. Went to the doggy dentist this morning. We had to go to Worsley, which thankfully isn't too far away from Richie Allen Show Towers, because my old friend, one of my dearest friends, the jazz woman, known as Jazz to her friends, is approaching 13 years old, and lately she's not been well at all, and she's got some teeth, she's got some tooth problems. She needs some orthodonty. Is that how you say that, is it? I don't know. Needs a bit of dentistry. It's all very weird, isn't it? And bizarre and mad at the moment in these COVID times. Because we had to go to this place in Worsley and we had to phone them to let them know that we were outside, because you can't go in, heaven forbid, you can't go in to the receptionist and say, "How are you? It's Richie Allen and Caroline with our dog Jazz." No, you can't do that. You have to phone them. They come out to you and say, "Oh, right, okay, yeah, hang on, we'll be back in a few minutes." Then they come back in a few minutes and they basically give your dog an examination in the open air, in the freezing cold, in the car park, as is the style of the time. Right? This is the style of the time because of COVID. Now, mercifully, there's that word again, mercifully, the vet dentist happens to be a more, I would say, a more senior gentleman. And when dealing with our furry friends, I prefer my veterinary surgeons to be senior ladies or senior gentlemen. There is a tendency these days for the old family vet to just disappear, and it's chains, isn't it? Everywhere you go now, it's vet chains, like Pets at Home and all of that jazz. And every time you go to the vet, you don't see your friend, the vet, you see some young person who you might not see next time. And I don't like that very much. So we saw a kind of a middle-aged vet today, and that was nice. So the young lady that is Jazz, the old woman that is Jazz, will now have to have an ultrasound. That was already planned anyway. She'll have an ultrasound next week because she's got a dicky ticker, don't you know? And after the ultrasound, if it's okay, she'll have an anaesthetic and she'll have her teeth done. She'll have her teeth done. I'm not sure whether we're going to go for veneers. We might go for veneers. I've been leafing through celebrity magazines, looking at everybody from Jessica Chastain to Little Mix to see is there a style of teeth we can give to Jazz, the German Shepherd mongrel. But in reality, she'll have two or three teeth taken out and God knows what else. But it's going to do her the world of good. I said I'd tell you that because some of you have been asking me today on social media. Piers Corbyn. I love Piers Corbyn. I love eccentric gentlemen that are very, very, very intelligent. And he's an eccentric gentleman who is very, very, very intelligent. Piers has been arrested more times now than Bo and Luke Duke of Hazard County. Hasn't he? I'm not laughing at him. It's a disgrace. But I think he has. I've ordered seasons 1 to 7 of The Dukes of Hazard, and I'm going to watch them over the weekend with the future Mrs. Allen, and I'm going to count the amount of times that Bo, Luke, Uncle Jesse or Daisy end up in Boss Hogg and Roscoe's prison or their little jail in Hazard County. My money is on Piers Corbyn will have been arrested more times than the Duke family. That's what I think anyway. Piers was arrested yesterday. I swapped a few text messages with him today. He was arrested yesterday. I really have the Dukes of Hazard box set. No, I haven't done that. Piers was arrested in Southwark yesterday. He was giving out these leaflets. We know about this because there was a bit of a controversy about this on Monday. He was giving out anti-lockdown leaflets, and some of the leaflets have an image of Auschwitz on them, and this has stirred up, well, a bit of controversy. There are some people who are very unhappy, and he has been called anti-Semitic. On his leaflet, you can see Auschwitz, the notorious horrible place, which I understand why it's still there, okay, as a reminder. But I think if my granddad or great-granddad had died there, I'd as soon see the place levelled to the ground and build a community centre there or a place for children or something. I know. There will be Jewish listeners who totally disagree with me, and that's fair enough. It's a horrible place. I can only imagine. I was in Dachau. Horrendous, right? Okay. Now, I understand what Piers is trying to do. Where on the sign leading into Auschwitz, it says, Arbeit macht frei. Work will make you free. They've mocked it up, have Piers and his chums, to make it say, vaccines are safe path to freedom. And he's been accused of anti-Semitism and all this nonsense, this crap in cancel culture times that we're in now. He's very bright, Piers, and he is controversial, aren't we all? And not remotely anti-Semitic, not remotely. He believes it's a fair comparison to draw a fair analogy because he believes that you and me are being coerced into taking a vaccine that we don't need and we don't want and that might cause us harm. Hence the Auschwitz thing. I said today on my website, is it crass? It might be. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. If some Jewish person, maybe if a very old Jewish person says, I find that offensive, fair enough, you have that right. It's a subjective thing. I don't like it. I don't like him being accused of anti-Semitism for it because it isn't. And anyway, he's in the soup again, is Piers Corbyn. If you want to read more about that, richieallen.co.uk, maybe a bit later on. The time is coming up for 5:08. Are you in top form? Are you ready for a little bit of news analysis? Well, you won't get it here. All you'll get here is my old garbage, and you know that. By the way, can I thank everybody who phoned in yesterday? And can I sincerely apologise to those who didn't? There is a way to defeat this problem, to overcome it, to get over it. That is, contact me through the website. Say, hey Baldy, try to get through to you. Didn't get through to you. And next time I do a phone in, I will make sure you get in first. That's a promise. That's the way to do it. All right. Fantastic callers yesterday. It was a pleasure to listen to you. Thank you. And I know, you're right, I should do more of the phone-ins. I will. Now, here's some big news. A trial has been launched in this country, in the UK, I should say, to see if giving people different COVID vaccines for their first and second doses works as well as the current approach of giving them the same type of vaccine twice. Oh, yeah. The idea, allegedly, is to provide more flexibility with vaccine rollout and to help deal with any potential disruption to supplies. So they were sitting around in government and in the SAGE committee, and they were like, well, at the moment, our approach is to give people the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine twice, or to give them the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine twice, but never the twain shall meet. You don't mix them. And Vernon Coleman, the Dr. Vernon Coleman, said to me today, don't forget, Richie, don't forget, the CDC in the United States absolutely rules out mixing these vaccines. Right? This is mad stuff now. Nadeem Zahawi, the UK's vaccine minister, he said no changes would be made to the UK's current approach until at least summer time. Here he is explaining this in Westminster Today, the vaccine minister, Nadeem Zahawi.
Today, I'm pleased to announce another clinical trial, a world-first study that will help cement the United Kingdom's position as a global hub for vaccination research. This trial will look at whether different vaccines can be safely used for a two-dose regime in the future to support a more flexible programme of immunisation. I want to just reinforce, Madam Deputy Speaker, that this is a year-long study and there are no current plans to change our existing vaccine programme, which will continue to use the same doses, but it will perform a vital role, helping the world understand whether different vaccines can be safely used. Our scientists have played a pivotal part in our response to this deadly virus, and once again, they are leading the way, helping us to learn more about this virus and how we should respond.
Pick and mix. Mix and match. It's like what Forrest Gump used to say. Mama always said life's like a box of coronavirus vaccines. You never know what you're going to get. This is mad stuff, isn't it? Isn't it? Mad stuff. Mixing and maxing. Mixing and matching, even. The vaccines. And by the way, if anybody was ever destroyed by a vaccine, it was Forrest Gump, wasn't it? Even the stupidest kids alive know that they've scored a touchdown when they're in the end zone. In Forrest's case, they had to get the crowd behind the end zone to tell him to stop. Clear case of vaccine injury. You'd have to be out of your mind, wouldn't you, to participate in this trial? You'd have to be out of your mind to do it. Or dirt poor. I don't know if they pay these people anymore. I have no idea. Yes, we'll give you a Pfizer vax and then in a few weeks' time we'll chuck a Moderna vax into you. What do you think? No thanks. And get the feck away from me at the speed of light, please. The study will be recruiting people aged 50 or older who haven't yet had any vaccine. They're not supposed to have had vaccines. People over 50 got to be over 70, is it at the moment, or something like that? Anyway, they are recruiting in London, Birmingham, Liverpool, Nottingham, Bristol, Oxford and Southampton. Thank God, not in Manchester or Salford. Some of them will get the Oxford jab followed by Pfizer or vice versa, 4 or 12 weeks apart. What's really going on? I don't know. It doesn't stop me from speculating, though. Does it? And this is pure speculation. It's pure conjecture. But I was thinking this morning, is it necessary to do this? Mix and match the vaccines. First of all, let's pretend the vaccines are safe. They're not. I don't believe they are. Again, that's my opinion. They're not safe for everybody. I believe that some people will get them and they'll be okay, but a lot of people won't be okay. That's how I feel about it, right? Okay. Is it necessary? Let's pretend the vaccines are tickety-boo. Is it necessary? No, is the answer. No. Obviously not. Why? Well, the country, or Matt Hancock's health department, has ordered 407 million doses of vaccines, right? 407 million. And that is 407 million of the seven most promising vaccines. As you well know, I don't need to tell you, three of them have already been approved by the regulatory authority, the MHRA. Now, of the three that have been approved, these include 100 million doses of the Oxford jab, which is enough to vaccinate 50 million people, and 40 million doses of the Pfizer jabs. Now, that's more than enough to cover the entire country, England, Scotland and Wales. I want you to think about that. That is enough. The 50 million and the 40 million does the entire country. And that includes that's inclusive of the two doses. Right. But Hancock has ordered 407 million vaccines, including millions of doses of the recently approved Moderna jab. Now, as I said today, you don't have to be Matt Damon's character in Goodwill Hunting. You don't have to be a mathematical genius to realise that if the 100 million Oxford AstraZeneca jabs and 40 million Pfizer jabs are more than enough to inoculate all of us with plenty to spare, we're going to have more than a quarter of a billion spare vaccines. Can anybody explain this to me? please. Can anybody explain this to me? And this is speculation on my part now. What I said just there is true. They've got more than enough between Pfizer and AstraZeneca. What's going on? And I speculated today, maybe this is the reason. Well, when I say maybe the reason they are trialing mixing the jabs is because they have so many. And maybe that explains why Anthony Costello. Now, if you ever hear anybody saying Costello, I want you to get a swordfish and slap them across the face. It's Costello. It always was. It always will be. It's Moran. It's not Moran. You Philistine English people, do you understand? Okay. Anthony Costello is a kiddie doctor. He's a paediatrician. He wants every child in the country to get a vaccine, even though children don't get coronavirus and they don't spread it. And I wonder, is these hundreds of millions of spare vaccines, does it have anything to do with the hysteria about these mutations? You know, the South African mutation and the Kent mutation. And the reason I ask that is because government ministers have been very quick to say that all of these vaccines, or at least the three that have been approved anyway, seem to work against the mutations. And as I said today on my own website, this is incredibly convenient for the health department that has ordered close to 500 million vaccines. Remember, the same people who buy and sell the vaccines are the very same people who inform us of these new mutations. Conjecture on my behalf. But they've got nearly 500 million vaccines, 407 million vaccines, for a population of north of 65 million, but children are not supposed to get those vaccinations. So you've got 407 million vaccines for how many adults are in the country? If you exclude children under 16, what does that leave you with? 30, 35 million adults? A little less, a little more? Mad, eh? So the vaccine minister, Nadeem Zahawi, did the whole gamut of the media this morning. He was on Julia Hartley Brewer's programme on Talk Radio, and he said this about the whole wide world. Listen.
Of course, we will absolutely protect all of the adult population of the United Kingdom and offer them the vaccine as soon as we can, and we continue to do that. But no one is safe until the whole world is safe. So this research, I think, will also help.
That's not true.
It is true, because until you vaccinate the whole of the world, you know, you're not going to be able to completely get rid of restrictions from countries that may not have any vaccine if they've got the virus and the virus mutates. So we have to work together, which is why we're putting £1.3 billion to the Gavi vaccine initiative.
Yeah, we're giving billions to the Gavi initiative. Who runs the Gavi initiative? Do I need to tell you? Surname rhymes with hates, because he hates you and me and everybody else, determined to vaccinate the bejesus out of us till the end of time. Yes, Bill Gates. Nobody is safe until the whole world is safe. He was very mildly challenged there by Julia Hartley Brewer. Didn't go nearly far enough. You can't be left out of lockdown until Hassan in Egypt is safe from coronavirus, or until April in Adelaide is safe from the virus. There's no leaving lockdown, no leaving restrictions until we've all had the vaccines. Now, staying with Nadeem Zahawi, I want you to listen to this carefully. In Westminster today, the former Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt wanted to know, how equipped are we if a deadly new variant emerges? Okay, this now, dear listener, is where everything is moving towards. This is the direction. Listen carefully. Again, Jeremy Hunt says, if a deadly new variant emerges, how equipped are we to deal with it? This is Nadeem Zahawi's answer.
So the manufacturers are already working on variants to their vaccine to take into account the mutation of the virus. Viruses will mutate to survive, and this virus is no different. There are about 4,000 mutations now around the world, some more concerning than others. We have in the United Kingdom a genome sequencing industry that is a world leader. About 50% of the sequencing has taken place just under in the United Kingdom. And not only are we working with the current manufacturers of Pfizer-BioNTech and, of course, AstraZeneca and Moderna that have been approved, but we're also looking at how we can make sure that we make the most of this new messenger RNA technology, which allows us the rapid development of vaccine variants that would then deal with the virus variants as rapidly as possible. And I spoke to the Science Select Committee a few weeks ago when I said we were planning to have in place the ability to go from the moment we can sequence a variant that we are really concerned about to the moment we can have a vaccine ready to be between 30 to 40 days, and then of course the manufacturing time. We've invested in both Oxfordshire in the VMIC, the Vaccination and Innovation Manufacturing Centre, and in CGMIC in Braintree, 127 million in there, just shy of 100 million in Oxfordshire, to be ready to manufacture any vaccine that we would need. And of course the Prime Minister also visited our, what I refer to as our seventh vaccine, which is the Valneva vaccine. That's a whole inactivated virus, so it doesn't just work on the spikes in the way the current two vaccines that we are deploying works. It works on the whole of the virus, which is much more likely then to capture any mutations from the spikes and therefore be incredibly effective. We've invested in that production facility in Scotland so that we can have that vaccine as a future proofing of sort of annual vaccination strategies or a booster in the autumn if necessary.
Imagine annual vaccination strategies or a booster in the autumn if necessary. I know you're not stupid. I know your ears are working perfectly well, thank you, Baldy. I know they are. But I want to play that bit in the middle again, worth hearing it.
Which allows us the rapid development of vaccine variants that would then deal with the virus variants.
Okay, just that little bit again and then I'll let it run.
Which allows us the rapid development of vaccine variants that would then deal with the virus variants.
Rapid development of vaccine variants, which would then even deal with the virus variants. And how does that work?
As rapidly as possible. And I spoke to the Science Select Committee a few weeks ago when I said we were planning to have in place the ability to go from the moment we can sequence a variant that we are really concerned about to the moment we can have a vaccine ready to be between 30 to 40 days and then, of course, the manufacturing time.
30 to 40 days. And this is where it's all going. This is the future now. And you know, I have said this before. It might sound a bit not glib as such, but you know what I mean. I don't do scaremongering. I don't do fear porn. It's a very upbeat, optimistic radio show, this. You know that. But he's just said there that in the future, when they say there is a disease heading our way, they can have a vaccine, the new mRNA, brand new technology. We can have a vaccine in doctors' surgeries within 40 days or around 40 days or 50 days and you'll have it. It'll be simple for you to get it. Very easy. Why? I was astonished today to hear about the level of infrastructure that is already in place in the UK and it isn't temporary. They tell you all the time, temporary, they say. Temporary vaccination centres. But don't believe them, no matter what they tell you. Listen to Sky News' Sarah Hewson telling you just how close you are and will be to a vaccination centre.
There are now more than 1,500 vaccination sites in England. These include 194 run by high street pharmacies, including Boots and Superdrug branches. More than 1,000 GP-led vaccination services, 250 hospital hubs and 89 large vaccination centres such as London Excel, football stadiums and race courses.
You won't be able to get a McDonald's franchise soon enough, by the way that goes. You hear that? No Mickey D's. So basically everywhere, there'll be thousands of these places. Thousands of them. And within walking distance, I would say, of any community, there'll be a vaccine centre. According to the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, who was not so much doorstepped, but he was followed by reporters in London today. According to Hancock, one in five adults have now had a coronavirus vaccine. Here he is.
We're on track to deliver the commitment we've made of offering the jab to all of the top four priority groups by the 15th of February. I'm just so proud of the team who are delivering this. It's going really, really well. You saw yesterday 10 million jabs done. Today, we passed the threshold of 1 in 5 of the population who have been jabbed already. And then we'll keep moving as fast as we can to make sure that everybody who needs a jab gets a jab.
There you are. Everybody who needs a jab gets a jab. You want a jab? Want a jab? You can have a jab. You can have a jab. Want a jab? Do you want a jab? I've got a jab. Got a jab. Got a jab. Got any jabs? There'll be jabs for everybody. Jabs for everybody. I'll be back with you in a moment. It's the BBG, not the BBC. Richie Allen, live from Salford here in the northwest of the UK. Loving your company. I'm reading your tweets when I come back after this from Shaz and Dave. Shaz and Dave. Rabbit, 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 rabbit. Rabbit, 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 rabbit. I could never do that. Rabbit, rabbit. Shaz and Dave. Cockney legends, Cockney icons. There ain't no please in you. Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show. If you've just tuned in, where the hell were you? Thanks for being there for me this afternoon. Loads and loads and loads of tweets coming in there. John, the John, New York City John, Boston John, John Rorty. How you doing, John? Love, John. Matt Hancock, jabs for everybody. Sounds like spear phishing, he says. Or perhaps a new website similar to Masks for All. Hashtag madness, says John. Thanks to Faisal for tweeting a graphic. The COVID is now in colours to suit everybody, says Faisal. That's a very good point made there, Faisal. These new variants, the Liverpool mutation, the Bristol mutation. Nadeem Zahawi said today, you probably heard him, there are now 4,000 variants. There are 4,000 variants of coronavirus, and some of them will be deadly. Don't worry, though. We will just amend the language. We will amend the algorithm in the mRNA existing vaccine. We will change it just a little bit. We don't have to go through the whole trialing process again. We don't have to get regulatory approval again. No, we just say, here it is, have it, it's great, and it'll save you from the new variant. We've got a Seychelles variant. Some lockdown breaching bastard went to the Seychelles and brought back more than a stick of rock. I know they don't do rock in the Seychelles. Brought back the Seychelles variant, and we think it's highly transmissible. Here's the vaccine for it. Here's the vaccine. We've got a Ballybeg one. I was raised in Ballybeg in Waterford. Hello, Ballybeg listeners. Miss ya. Loved Ballybeg. Loved my childhood there. The outdoors part of that childhood, it must be said. But anyway, we got a Ballybeg variant. Yes, we do. Yeah, got a Cleggan variant there. Jean Ann Crowley hasn't been well of late, but she's better now. And it wasn't coronavirus. No, it wasn't. There you are. That's what they'll say. Why will they say it? Why, you ask me? I tell you, every day why. Because the media. Because the media. As we will hear in a moment. We're going to Ireland in a moment. We're off to the Emerald Isle for a bit of audio. The media is in complete and utter lockstep with the agenda. Gail tweets. How you doing, Gail? Andy tweets. You can almost hear the ker-ching in Hancock's voice. Thanks, Andy. Gail tweets, oh, I see, she says, the empty shops on the high street are for these jab centres. Gail, they might be. I don't have any evidence that they are, but you never know. Ricky says, it would give me great pleasure in seeing the Houses of Parliament crumble and the City of London too. Thanks, Ricky. I know how you feel, pal. I know how you feel. Alan Badger, how you doing, Alan? Richie, it's the virus minority report. Feckin' psychopaths. Says Alan. Alan, you'll get no argument from this BBG, so you won't. Hi to my friend Diane Denison in somewhere between Waterford and Cork. Diane was on the programme. Great lady. We'll have her back, no doubt. Thanks for the link, Diane. I will definitely look at it later on. I'm going to send a copy of it to myself now. Chris Clough says, looking ahead to our future, to the future of humanity, where you'll be vaccinated all the time. Chris says, Richie, more pricks than a dartboard. Absolutely, Chris. Thanks very much for that. Hi to Ewan Cooper. How you doing, Ewan? Hi to Flying Pig, otherwise known as Alex. How you doing, Alex? He says, Richie, these bastards are insane. Again, I can't argue with you. Hi to Colm in Dublin, long-time listener. How you doing, Colm? Colm. Ah, Richie Mutation. Here's my post for March. He says, thanks for your post, my friend. I'll give it a retweet there for you. A retweet is not an endorsement. I say that, Colm, because I haven't read it. But I'll retweet you anyway, my friend. Retweet you anyway, boy. So I will, boy. Thanks, Ewan, for your funny meme about Nadim. Or Nadine Zahawi. Can't get into that. Hi to Jane. Jane says, so we're guinea pigs. No thanks, says Jane. Thank you, Jane. Again, can't find anything or anybody to disagree with on my Twitter feed today. Alan in Liverpool. Working musician. An engineer. A roadie. Knows all there is to know about live music. And he's pissed off like every other musician. How you doing, Alan? Nice to hear from you today, my friend. Hi to James Rolfe. How you doing, James? He says, never mix your meds, folks. Just remember, they will be trialling on you. Exactly, James. How dare they say, why don't we mix the vaccines? See how we get on. How about you? Fake off. Kieran says, Richie, Billy Boy stated he wanted the world vaccinated against COVID back in March 2020. Makes you think. Absolutely, my friend. Hi to Steve Davis. Not Steve Interesting Davis, sadly. Not Steve Interesting Davis. Six-time world snooker champion. But Steve Davis, who says, Richie Pearce is absolutely spot on, but sadly, the masses will watch the lamestream media and cheer his arrest for trying to warn them that they are guinea pigs. Thank you, Steve. That's a fantastic amount of intelligent comments coming in today from this audience. I expect nothing more. Nothing less, I should say. Yeah, Pearce printed his leaflets. And there's an Auschwitz image on, and they changed Arbeit macht frei to vaccines will set you free and all of that. And they've called him anti-Semitic, which is garbage. And he's under the cosh now, is Pearce. But I think he's got very thick skin, which is a big help in his line of work. You know, they've been after Pearce for many years, of course, because he has decimated the climate change bollocks, hasn't he? Hi to Aaron Phelan. How you doing, Aaron? Nice to hear from you today. I'm arguing with a family member, Richie. She thinks that the best way to rid the world of COVID is to have trailers roll into neighbourhoods, grab people against their will, and force the vaccine on everyone. This will make COVID go away. I told her, that sounds like Nazi Germany. It does, Aaron. Again, I can't find anything to disagree with. And I'm looking for a tweet that I saw much earlier from somebody from Liverpool who I have not come across before on Twitter. If I find the tweet, I'll read it. In the meantime, how you, my new Liverpool friend? Nice to meet you. And Cliff Moore, long-time listener, long-time supporter of this programme and the independent media. How you doing, Cliff? Richie, I am lying on the sofa due to having a flu-like virus for the last couple of days, says Cliff. I had the same last year and the year before. And the year before that, high dose vitamin C. I take daily vitamin A, C, D3, K, zinc, iodine. I will recover soon. I will not be getting a PCR test, says my pal Cliff. Thank you, Cliff. Good man. Good to hear from you, my friend. A lot of tweets going on there. How are you, William, in Scotland? Love that. There isn't an accent in the world that I can do. Charlie says, Richie, I hear the Sir Graham Brady style is popular in canine dentistry circles for 2022. Good man. Good man. And my new Liverpool listener is Frank Chapman in Liverpool. How you doing, Frank? Thanks for getting in touch with the programme. And Scottish John in Austin, Texas, radio presenter himself, long-time contributor to InfoWars, and he's graced this programme with his presence. Scottish John. He says, Richie, beep, beep, beep. This just in, 3 million new COVID cases reported in Austin. 1 million on my street alone. Frank Garson, news at 10, text arse. Good man, good man. Let's move on. Let's move on. Why don't we just move on? All righty. Let's go to Ireland then. Darby O'Gill in the little people country. Ireland. Pat Kenny of News Talk. Often. Yesteryear often referred to as a very robotic presenter with very little charisma. That was just his wife of the time. Pat Kenny of News Talk interviewing the Irish Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly. I'll say nothing. I'll say nada. listen to this little exchange. It's deliciously dystopian, so it is. Pat Kenny.
A final question. The vaccine rollout and lots of people getting vaccinated, 200,000 administered so far. Is there a software system to record vaccinations? Because the time might come when you'll have to prove to various people that you are vaccinated before you can do action A, B or C.
Yes, there is, 100%.
And it's working?
Yeah, it is.
You know, access for GPs, pharmacists, etc. When that time comes, they'll all have access to it. So there will be a database saying that Pat Kenny or Stephen Donnelly is vaccinated.
Yes, there will, yeah.
Okay, on that note, Stephen Donnelly, Minister for Health, thank you very much for joining us.
Does anybody know what Kenny finds funny about that? I don't find it remotely funny. It sends the shiver down my spine.
Yes, there will, yeah.
Okay, on that note, Stephen...
on that note, thanks, Stephen Donnelly. Thanks. Wow. On that note, goodbye. Software system, record of vaccinations. You might have to prove you're vaxxed to do A, B or C. And anybody who needs access to it can just get access to it. Yeah. They've remade Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Do you want to go and see it, love? I don't know if we'll be able to, because at the foyer of the cinema, they'll just realise we've not been vaccinated. And he'll probably chase us out of the building. Pat Kenny, huh? 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 Thanks to the lovely, the very, very bright and very articulate Fiona Marie Flanagan for sending me that clip. Thank you, Fiona. Tyranny. Ireland has its own answer to Desmond Swain, Conservative MP. We have Michael McNamara, TD Independent, Independent TD, from County Clare. Michael was asking a question of the Irish Mental Health Minister, Mary Butler, this morning in Dáil Éireann. Michael is pissed off at the way mental health impact of lockdown is just being ignored. He's really cheesed off. He's even more cheesed off at the media for doing the state's bidding, because the state is now subsidising the media in Ireland. It is. And this is feckin' fascism, even if Michael can't bring himself to say it. This is a great bit of oratorial. I don't know. I've never been very oratorially good myself. This is good stuff. Michael McNamara, Clare TD, having a go at the health minister responsible for mental health, Mary Butler.
All of us are working and living in an incredibly oppressive society at the moment. The feeling is entirely oppressive, and it's largely driven by elements in the media. Not all of the media, but elements in the media. You know, I questioned whether there was sufficient coverage of mental health, and I was attacked by some public health doctors for doing that and told, of course NPHET are trained to take account of mental health data. I said, well, how can they take account of it if it's not there? And a media outlet, instead of probing whether the data was there or not, ran what I would consider to be an attempt to discredit my probing of it, and ran a line saying that the CMO said that NPHET regularly take account of mental health. If you look at the minutes of NPHET, no account taken of mental health up to the time of that second lockdown. None, not a mention. One subcommittee mentioned it, but no mention otherwise. We had the HSE National Clinical Programme for Awareness and Management to Patients Presenting with Self-Harm came out and said that I was wrong to say that there wasn't data. They had data from every emergency department. Go look for the data, and you find out that they have data from some emergency departments, but no data from any of the children's hospitals. And we know children are suffering, and we know that there are emergency departments. So that is a lie on behalf of a government agency to discredit somebody who's probing stuff. And that's not good, and that's oppressive. We have another arm of the government practically going out to Dublin Airport to burn witches live in air. I'm talking about RT. It's an absolute disgrace. It is oppressive, and it is driving anxiety in this state, what RT is doing. There are massive problems with free media in Ireland. Always the Irish Times with their hands out looking for money from the government. God knows they're entitled to it. They've been doing your bidding for a year.
Yeah, we'll just catch that last little bit. The Irish Times holding their hands out for money from the Irish government.
We have another arm of the government practically going out to Dublin Airport to burn witches live in air. I'm talking about RT. It's an absolute disgrace. It is oppressive, and it is driving anxiety in this state, what RT is doing.
There are massive problems with free media in Ireland. I'm always the Irish Times with their hands out looking for money from the government. God knows they're entitled to it. They've been doing your bidding for a year. But where is the free media to come from if media is the only income source for media? I'm not talking about all media, but the primary income source for media is the Department of Health, is the government. Of course they're doing the government's bidding.
Thanks,
and
Deputy.
Of course they're driving a narrative. And of course they are attacking those who question what is going on. And it's not sustainable.
Okay,
it
Deputy.
Is oppressive, and it is damaging the fabric of our society. And I thank you for the latitude you've given me to make
You're
those
welcome.
Points coherent.
Mahan Bukal, Gurav Mila Mahagud, Mihal, Gurav Mila Mahagud, Mihal, McNamara, Michael McNamara there, TD from Clare, Choctadola, it means he's a Member of Parliament, tearing a new arsehole for Mary Butler there. Absolutely right. The mental health impact of lockdown ignored, the media in complete lockstep with the Irish government, worse again, the government paying the media to do its bidding. That's a fact, that's not conjecture. That is fecking fascism. Do you understand that? I wonder how many Irish people understand that. You know, it's not that the fourth estate in Ireland is just looking the other way. That's bad enough. It's bad enough when you just look the other way, isn't it? Because you have basically divested yourself of your responsibility to do your job. That's bad enough, right? That's maybe, I don't know, an accessory after the fact. But when you're in bed with the government and working on programming the minds of Irish people to believe that they're living in Armageddon and that a respiratory infection could kill them at any minute, at any time, it's fascism. It feels to me like Ireland is worse than the UK. If that's possible, I don't know. Do feel free to tweet me. It's at BBG Richie, at BBG Richie, at BBG Richie. It's at BBG Richie. Once we'll do you. On Twitter. I'll be back with you in a moment after this message, and I'll read some more of your tweets. I'll have some more music, and then we're going to hear about a miracle. We're going to hear about a miracle. A miracle.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
The time is 14 and a half minutes to the top of the hour, so it is.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
Now, I've had an email from Piers Corbyn. Piers might be listening in. If you are, Piers, how are you doing? Thanks for the email. Here's a statement from Piers on the libelous claim that he is anti-Semitic. This is very interesting now. Bear with me. The notion I am in any way anti-Semitic is absurd and insulting. I was married 22 years to a Jewish woman. The mother's side, forebears of whom fled the Baltic states because of the Nazis. I employed at my company, weatheraction.com, a Jewish researcher, graduate from Imperial College Physics, having known his father when I was there as a physics student. I worked with international scientists who are Jewish, namely Dr. John Beckman, with whom I wrote a paper published by the Italian Institute of Physics on the cosmological density parameter back in 1982, and with Professor Richard Lindzen of MIT, appearing with him on climate matters in a joint presentation, with him as lead presenter at the UK Institute of Physics, later part of a team of five, including him, at the Russian Academy of Sciences. I also arranged for Professor Lindzen to speak in public to MPs and others in the Houses of Parliament, where I also spoke. Any claims I am or have ever been anti-Semitic are baseless and false and appear related to baseless accusations and fake Twitter claims. They appeared, it seems, as a bizarre way of associating such false claims with my brother. He is not anti-Semitic. Neither is Alex Heaton, the artist involved in the recent leaflet, subjected to police review after an MP's intervention. Thank you, Piers Corbyn. Very well writ, Piers. A very good riposte, Piers. Married for 22 years to a Jewish lady whose mum fled the Baltic because of the Nazis. Piers is trending on Twitter, you see, because of the leaflet. I wrote about this on richieallen.co.uk today. The people behind these campaigns are unimaginably evil. They really are. These are sick, twisted puppies. Sick puppies, these people. I don't think there's any counselling. I don't think there's any shock therapy. You can RP McMurphy the bejesus out of these people and Charlie Cheswick. You can tie them down to a table, stick two things and stick some conductant on their temples and shock the piss out of them. These people are sick. Piers Corbyn doesn't have a racist bone in his body, no more than his brother Jeremy Corbyn does. But it doesn't matter. You see, we live in what I was calling this years ago a post-truth world. Post-fact reality. The truth no longer matters. When you have something like Wikipedia, which has become the go-to place in the world for facts, and any Wikipedia page can be edited by anybody with a vested interest. We're in a very seriously spooky place, aren't we, really? You know, Piers Corbyn's enemies, they get to go onto his Wikipedia page and call him every name under the sun. And they can do that. There isn't any barrier to it. This is the craziness, you know, we're dealing with day by day, by day by day, by day by day. Anyway, shall I read some more of your tweets? Shall I? They've been very good so far. Alan came back on to say, Richie, I remember in school having a great history teacher who explained the Troubles. She was looking back, pro-Republican, not IRA. It must drive you nuts as a Brit. Don't get how, why the... Alan, I can't read that. It's my fault. I should have read that before reading it out. It means I can't figure out. I kind of have an idea of what you're saying. You might rewrite that to me and send it to me, please. We do get excited when we're typing on our phones. And it's very easy not to be as clear in your sentence creation. He says ironically. It happens to me all the time when I tweet on my phone, to be honest. Charlie says, Richie, I used to think estate agents were the lowest form of life. Then I found HR workers. When I thought humanity could sink no lower, I discovered journalists. While being utterly convinced there was nothing lower, I discovered politicians, says Charlie. Thank you, Charlie. Yes, lots of tweets. Do keep them coming in at BBG Richie, at BBG Richie. Here's another tune. Jeff Lynne doesn't like women. You made a fool of me. Misogynistic bastard.
The BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yellow and evil woman. Time's about 5 minutes to 6 o'clock. The BBG, not the BBC. I'm probably going to be with you till about 6:30. I think it'll be about 6:30 today anyway. It's just me and you, Europe's most listened to independent radio show, The Richie Allen Show, live from Salford and Richie Allen Show Towers. You can see Richie Allen Show Towers from the moon, apparently. Shasta says, Richie, what an impassioned speech from the Irish TD, Michael McNamara. He is spot on, says Shasta. Very moving indeed to hear that. Thank you, Shasta. I will pass it on. I plan on emailing the gentleman and saying thank you kindly for saying those things, and invite him on. He will say no, of course, because you can't be appearing on programmes where dirty anti-Semites have been on in the past. So he'll say no to me, but anyway, look, I don't mind at all. at all. You know what I started doing yesterday after the show? I started watching episodes of Glen Rowe on YouTube. Glen Rowe was an Irish soap that ran for too long. Too bloody long. It came out of a Gabriel Byrne thing. Well, Gabriel was the lead actor, wasn't he? Called Bracken. Bracken. Were you in Bracken, Jean Anne, at any time in your career? Glen Rowe was set in the fictional town of Glen Rowe. Is it fictional Glen Rowe, the town, I mean? Is it? Help me out, Paddies and Patricias. Paddies and Patricias, I need your help. Was Glen Rowe, was it a fictional town? In Wicklow, anyway. Glen Rowe has the Guinness Book of World Records, and it will never be defeated, for the slowest moving serial drama ever committed to the small screen. Episodes were 30 minutes long and ran on a Sunday. Now, you would imagine, wouldn't you, dear listener, wouldn't you imagine that if you only had to fill 30 minutes once a week, you could inject a bit of pace into the programme? But it was very slow. But some very gifted actresses and actors appeared in it. And I met one or two of them over the years through my radio experiences, like Mick Lally, who it was always a pleasure when I bumped into Mick down at Red Kettle Theatre in Waterford Garter Lane, and when he would come into WLRFM. And even though she kind of went into retirement, Mary McAvoy, who played Biddy Byrne, and God rest them, Joe Lynch, who played Dinny Byrne. And my mother was obsessed with Glen Rowe. Do you remember that? Glen Rowe. Ah, go on, hang on a second. Let's see, can we get a scene from Glen Rowe? Let's see. What were you watching yesterday on YouTube? Let's see. Here we go. Bit of Glen Rowe. At all. Have you got a bit of Glen Rowe there? At all, have you? I have at all. I might have. You have the last episode. We won't have the last episode. No, we won't have that. What will we have? Will we have a conversation between Dinny and his son Miley, will we? Give you a flavour of the type of programme it was. Here we go then. Here's Mick Lally playing Miley Byrne and Joe Lynch playing Dinny. And this is a kitchen scene. Oh, God be with the days. Dinny's at the sink now doing a bit of washing up there. In comes Miley. His tea, son.
Eh? Have enough of tea.
Have enough of tea.
Sweet cake. No, sure, had me dinner. As far as I could see, we were having a lot.
I think whoever wrote the dialogue, there should be a statue. There should be a statue placed to them in Dublin's version of Hollywood, wherever that is. Let's start this again. Tay, have enough of tay. Bit of sweet cake. No, sure, had me dinner. Fan dabby dozy this. Hang on.
Please.
In comes Miley.
Hey, there's tea. Have enough of tea. Sweet cake.
Nah, sure, had me dinner.
As far as I could see, we were having a lot more than your dinner.
I'll be God now. Is a man not entitled to give his wife a nice, friendly squeeze without having half the country bursting in on top of them?
Don't get me wrong. I was glad to see you getting back to normal.
We're always back to normal.
Matter of opinion. Would it be in order to ask, is there anything stirring?
No, it would not be in order to ask if there's anything stirring. Because not only is there nothing stirring, but there's going to be nothing stirring.
Fantastic stuff. If you want to see any more of it, whole episodes can be viewed at youtube.com. Glen Rowe, 1994 there. Mick Lally and Joe Lynch. I think in that episode, Miley the Farmer was given Biddy one in the living room of the house, and half the village burst in the door, and it was a bit embarrassing and all the rest of it, right? Shall we move on to more serious matters? It's exactly a minute past six. I was hankering. I had a bit of nostalgia yesterday. Biddy Byrne. God, she was gorgeous, Mary McAvoy, back in the day. I had a crush on her. But then when you're an adolescent boy in Ireland and you've only got four channels, you know? You know the way it is. Right, okay. Remember the flu now. Remember the flu? We've covered it extensively, and I've covered it on the website, the flu has disappeared. It is gone, never to be seen again. Remember Colm Henry from Ireland's Health Service Executive? Do you remember Colm Henry on the radio?
How many actual ICU beds are left in the public hospital system right now?
At this point in time, Brendan, our core queue capacity, out of the 286 odd beds, we have 37 free. But the important thing to reinforce is that our hospitals are used to every flu season. Unfortunately, we don't have flu this season, but every season after Christmas, we frequently in local areas have to develop surge capacity beds, and we sometimes have to transfer critically ill patients between hospitals so that we can go from one place which is full to one place which is not full.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we don't have flu this season.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we don't have flu this season.
And then?
The only circulating virus in the country at the moment is COVID. So if you have any nasal respiratory symptoms, anything of that nature, it's COVID until proven otherwise.
Yeah. The flu is gone, you know. Flu is gone. Flu has gone away. Flu is gone. Flu is gone to stay. The BBC thought it would get into this afternoon. Where, in the name of all that's sacred, is the flu? Here is the BBBBC.
Statistics released earlier in the week have shown the number of people being diagnosed with flu has dropped by 95% to a level not seen in the UK for more than 100 years. What does this mean? Let's talk to John McCauley, who is from the World Health Organization. Hello, a very good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon.
We don't have the specific figures just yet, but if we are looking at that sort of drop, what does that mean?
What does it mean, John McCauley from the World Health Organization?
We follow flu activity throughout the year, and we've been doing this for decades, really. And what we've seen this year is really very, very low levels across the world, both Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere. And what we see really is that, as you said, they're 95% down on a normal year and possibly even lower than that. You could ask whether or not this was a lack of surveillance, but we know in centres, you know, in the UK, for example, we know we can pick up certain things and we pick them up, but we don't pick up flu in circulation in the population. We see the same kinds of things from the Middle East, from parts of Africa, although in parts of Africa there is flu in circulation. In West Africa, in Côte d'Ivoire, there is flu in circulation. But most of the world, flu is in very low numbers, but it's not gone away. There was flu in, as I was saying, Côte d'Ivoire, there's been flu in Cameroon, there's been flu in India and in Bangladesh, Indonesia, but most places it's very low.
And in those places where it is low, is this all about the social distancing, the working from home that we talk about so much? Is it driven by that?
Is the flu gone because of the lockdown measures that we've been subjected to? The hand washing, the social distancing, hands, face, space, masks. Is it, John from the WHO?
Well, I expect so. We've had increased,
I expect so,
increased vaccination in the UK, and that may contribute somewhat to it. But still, it's the minority of the population in the UK that's vaccinated. And yet it's throughout the population that we've seen the drop. And also the drops have been seen where vaccination hasn't been enhanced or isn't even at very high levels in the population. So I think really it will be the social distancing, particularly wearing masks and people working from home and not travelling on the underground, etc., public transport so much. But also it could be part of it was lack of international travel, but there is, as we hear, there's still significant numbers of people travelling internationally, although they may then be quarantined. So it's a combination. I think it's a combination of factors.
Now, ask him, has coronavirus been replaced, or has flu been diagnosed as coronavirus? Ask him. I've just paused this, by the way. Ask him, is flu being diagnosed as COVID? Because you can't just expect us to believe that flu is gone because of masks and stuff. Ask him.
Just all of these non-pharmaceutical factors.
Go on.
And is it unalloyed good news, or what could it mean for next year?
Oh, wench, harlot, witch, useless fecker, not fit for purpose, no. The follow-up question was, Mr. McCauley, is flu being diagnosed as COVID? Because you can't expect us to believe flu has just gone because of masks and social distancing, but then tell us that COVID is thriving because we're not following the guidelines. John, are you there, John? Do you think she'd have been sacked if she'd asked him that? Has flu been relabeled as COVID? Flu is gone. Flu is gone to stay. What do you think of that, George? Oh, yeah. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. What do you think of that, Freddie? We're having a miracle. Mother Nature does it all for us. The wonders of this world go on. The hanging out. And flu is gone. Captain Cook and Canaan Abel. Jimmy Hansen to the Tower of Babel. It's a miracle. Flu is gone. Flu has gone away. Flu has gone to stay. That's just the way it is. Time is exactly 8 minutes past six. Asher, as we're in the kind of form for it, here is... Ah, now, now, now. Somebody said to me recently, Richie, I'm gay. This is on Twitter. I'm gay. Play me a little bit of C&C Music Factory. Your wish is my command. For my gay overlords everywhere. Gonna play that for my friend John Rorty on Long Island, New York. How you doing, John? That C&C Music Factory gonna make you sweat. Great old tune, that. Great nightclub tune, that. Yeah, John, Long Island. Love John, because back 18 months or so, well, it wasn't 18 months ago, was it, John? It was about a year and a bit ago. I nearly ended up travelling to New York to watch Bob Seger, and I wouldn't have, it would have been difficult for me getting around at the last minute. I was going to go at the very last minute, and I put a cryptic thing on Twitter, and John got back to me at the speed of light to offer transport and accommodation. What a gentleman, John. John lives on Long Island with his 23, well, he'd been married to Steve for 23 years. Has John. John never got the message in Bible school and Sunday school. It's Adam and Eve, not John and Steve, John. But top man, John. Thanks for the tweet. He just tweeted me, in fact. Let me just read that tweet because it's an interesting tweet. Let me read that. Joseph says, if you want to play any more dance music, I'm not, Joseph. I'm not. We don't do dance music here. Not on the BBG show. John says, Richie, I can't believe that after a year of COVID incorporated, people will still believe that by magic, the ancient aspect of flu is gone to make way for COVID on stage. Crazy shite, says John. Let's go back to Glenroe in County Wicklow. Last time we visited in on the Byrne family, Miley Byrne was talking to his father, Dinny Byrne, about being caught in a passionate embrace with his wife, Biddy. Let's move on a little bit, and we can now join Biddy, Miley's wife, who's talking to her mother, whose name I can't remember. We'll have a listen to a bit of that and then we'll move on.
How's Miley?
Oh, he's fine.
As a matter of fact, never better.
Back to normal.
It all depends on what you mean by normal.
You know very well what I mean.
No, I don't. Normal at 21 and normal at 36 are two very different things.
No, not for me they weren't.
Yeah, but you're a sex maniac.
What? I beg your pardon.
Yes, you are. It's a well-known fact.
And you're past all that, I suppose.
No, no. It's not the centre of the universe. Not anymore.
And what is then?
Ugh, I don't know. In the beginning, the important thing is the marriage itself. It seems to have a life of its own. Then it's the children. Then you start looking at yourself, you see life passing you by. Disenchantment sets in.
And what about Carmel?
Well, Carmel was never really the issue. I was just a bomb ready to go off and she lit the fuse.
Well, you've put...
More next week from Glenroe. Right, let's move on. Importantly, 14 minutes past six. Let's move swiftly on. Gabriel Scally. What about Gabriel Scally? Well, Rishi Sunak is the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, allegedly the bloke with his hands on the nation's purse strings. And Sunak, this is an extraordinary Telegraph story today the Daily Telegraph. Sunak has said that he fears that the government scientific advisers are moving the goalposts, direct quote, by the way, on the requirements for ending lockdown. That's what he said, Sunak. He said, I fear that the SAGE advisers are moving the goalposts on the requirements for ending lockdown. Okay, in other words, these guys don't want to end lockdown. So they keep changing the requirements, moving the goalposts as such. All right, and there was a lot of talk about this today. Sunak said Britain is approaching a fat lady sings moment when lockdown must be lifted, never to return. Right. Now, Sarah Hewson of Sky wanted to get into this with the Irish scientist Gabriel Scally, who's former regional director of public health for the southwest of England. So this Irish guy, Scally, you will see him on the BBC and on Sky constantly because he's a former regional director of public health. And this guy loves lockdowns. So Sarah Hewson said to him, what about the Chancellor saying about, you know, moving the goalposts? We can never get out of lockdown. No matter what we do, you change the requirements. You'll hear Sarah Hewson's question first, and I think this is an interesting exchange myself.
Now, we heard yesterday from the Chief Medical Officer that we are now past the peak of the second wave. That is putting increasing pressure on the Prime Minister to release lockdown restrictions, potentially to open schools earlier. Could that happen? Is the time right?
Well, I think it all depends on the case numbers. And I know that that is a position that has been criticised, but it's actually the infections that count. It's people getting infected. And the opening of anything, I think, depends on how that is going. And crucially, it depends on how the variants are behaving. And we know that within the last week, there have been emergency actions taken to really do some intensive case hunting, virus hunting in some areas to try and stamp down on the variants. So the variants is a really crucial issue. And I think my personal feeling is that we've got to wait and see. And it would be wrong, I think, to expect everything to happen on one day, or even the same thing to happen everywhere in one day, because we are going to see a different pattern across the country. And for schools to open, I think each school would need to, and the parents and the children, I think, should be in an area which has a relatively low level of circulating vaccine. And so we can't make that judgment just across the whole country. It perhaps has to be looked at a more local basis.
Focusing on case numbers, though, it is being criticised by some because it is a shift of the goalposts, isn't it? When we've talked about the reason for this lockdown, and what we're waiting to find out is whether the vaccine rollout and the lockdown are saving lives and protecting the NHS. If you then start talking about bringing case numbers down, you're pushing it all back further, aren't you?
Yeah, you're changing the goalposts constantly because you don't ever want to end lockdown. Stamping down on the variants, and I said this at the beginning of the programme, this is their ace card, variants. We found a variant and we believe, and these fuckers, I managed to go the entire programme without swearing, I'm saying it now, these fucking bastards have been caught lying through their teeth. Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance were caught lying through their teeth last week when they said that the Kent variation, I think it was, might be 30% more dangerous. Maybe they said the South African variation was 30% more likely to cause serious infection than the regular coronavirus. And the Nerve Tag group, the new and emerging respiratory virus group, the people who look at the new and emerging respiratory viruses, they basically called Vallance and Whitty liars and said, we don't have any evidence. So these guys were able to go on television, lie through their teeth and do it with immunity and impunity. Just make it up. Yeah, we believe that it's 30% more. It's more transmissible, and we think it's 30% more, you know, nasty, effectively, in terms of the symptoms and stuff. No science, no data, just making it up as they go along. And this is their ace card. These variants from around the world. This Egypt, Nadeem Zahawi said today there are 4,000 variants now. 4,000, eh? They've just got to pick one and say, it's in the country. We're going to send testing kits through your letterbox. You must send them back. And in the meantime, you're going to have to lock down in your particular area. That's what he said there, Scally. It'll be more area-based, more regional-based. What do you do with these people? What do you do with them, you know? It isn't rhetorical. What you can never do is never become like them. You can't lie. You can't cheat. You must never use violence as a solution, ever. Don't threaten these people. Don't harass them. That's taboo. It's out the door. But what else can we do with these people? The media should be chopping these people in half, metaphorically, should be cutting their legs out from underneath them. I'm not the greatest presenter that ever lived or anywhere near it, and you know that. Can you imagine what I would do with him on a radio show? You know? And I worked among some people that made me look like a bit of a ham and egger. Ham and egger, that's a great old phrase. You cut him to pieces. His answer about changing the goalposts.
Well, I don't think so. I don't know what the problem is here. It's very simple, very simple. If you have a large number of people getting infected, a substantial proportion of them at the moment, until the vaccine really kicks in, will become ill. Some of them will become very seriously ill and some will die. So if deaths and admissions to hospital are going down, that's a great thing. But unless we keep our eye on the virus numbers, on the case numbers, the infections and the variants, they will just shoot up again. You can't. Just because deaths and admissions have gone down, it doesn't mean the virus has gone away. Absolutely not. Taking the foot off the brake now and even putting it on an accelerator by opening things up would just allow the virus to spread wildly in our communities. And we're not yet at a position where that's a sensible thing to be able to foresee properly any time when that would be a good idea. So I would urge caution and I would urge us to look really at the numbers and try and get that number, the number of new cases down as far as we can and get us a proper fine test, trace, isolate and support system to see us through the next number of months.
I'm reminded of the hilarious scene in The Life of Brian when the guy in the jail cell has been there forever. He's got the really long beard and the really long hair. And despite being incarcerated, he still loves the Romans. Do you remember him? Nail him up. And one of the guards spits in Brian's face. And the prisoner says, oh, favouritism. I lie awake at night dreaming about being spat at in the face. I lie awake at night dreaming about getting the opportunity to interview some of these people. That's all. How do you lie awake at night dreaming? You don't. I lie awake at night fantasising. That's the one. About getting the chance to interview these people. Not to grandstand. I know I've said this before as well. But to question them. Hey, by the way, I've just had a message from Facebook. I might be banned if I make another mistake. The sharing of Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, if you please. The sharing of his most recent brand new tube video. I've had a strike for that. That's been deleted. And then I shared a link to a transcript of it. So that's been deleted as well as fake news, apparently. Facebook has told me that what Dr. Vernon Coleman said in his last video is fake news. There you are. Lovely. And if I get any more of these, the Richie Allen Facebook page will be deleted. And I won't give a shite, believe you me. So Facebook is firing a shot across the bows there because, well, we can't have people listening to somebody like Dr. Vernon Coleman, who's written hundreds of books, thousands of columns, was a national broadcast media guest, regular guest, and all the rest of it. Can't have anybody listening to him. So sharing him will be verboten. It'll be verboten in the very near future. Well, now it seems. Now. So there you are. I don't know. Just got a message there as I'm on with you. Hi to Tracy Kavanagh. How you doing, Tracy? Former guest on the programme, of course. A woman, a businesswoman who stood up to the tyranny. Did we ever find out what happened on January 30th when the businesses were going to open? I know quite a few did. There were some videos on social media of the lady in Scotland who stood up to the police when they came into her business and told her to close down. But does anybody else know? Is there any data in terms of, does anybody know how many businesses actually said, listen, we're going to stay open if we bloody well feel like staying open? I'd like to get that information. Oh yeah, I really would. Hey, by the way, thanks so much to you for all your tweets today. You properly inundated me with tweets. I'm glad of that. It's at BBG Richie. At BBG Richie. Moinga says, I was asked to kindly stop sending my specimen in the post for COVID testing. I guess I misread the letter, says Moinga. Thank you, son. Thank you, old son. Thank you, old son. Right, let's move on down because I know there were one or two more came in. I'm just about to bid you adieu. Anyway, Chris says you throw him around like a rag doll. No, Chris. We never lay hands on anybody. We can't resort to violence. Paul Curtis Tours. How you doing, Paul? My pal in Coventry in the Midlands. Richie, ever wondered how much the value of over 50s pensions in the UK is worth? It's worth billions. And what impact that would have on UK pension funds and government if they didn't have to pay out? Now, I've seen this said. I have seen this said on Twitter. A lot of people saying they want to get rid of the elderly. And by getting rid of them, not having to pay their pensions. Maybe. You won't, again, you won't get an... I'm not endorsing that. Not endorsing that, but. I know where you're coming from. Chris says, Richie, it sounds like Sunak is a bit different. Has a bit of a conscience, maybe. Feeling a bit queasy about fronting the Great Reset shit show, says Chris. Chris, I wouldn't go that far. Mr. Goldman Sachs, Rishi Sunak, I wouldn't go that far at all. You're welcome, John Rorty. Thank you, my friend. Right, we're going to say goodbye to one another this afternoon now. There you go. Listen, stay in touch with richieallen.co.uk. I'll be updating the website daily with articles. Some will be interesting, some will be crap. That's how it goes. Do sign up if you want. If you don't want it, don't sign up. Don't worry about it. I will be with you on Sunday morning for 2 hours at 10 o'clock UK time for Sunday Morning Melodies. Yippee, can't wait for that. I've already been picking out some choice cuts, some lovely tunes, lovely songs and stories, raising songs and stories for Sunday Morning Melodies on this channel at 10 o'clock. So please join me for that. In the meantime, thanks for being with me this week. I really appreciate it. Look after yourselves and one another. And by the way, there was something else now and it's gone out of my mind. Might have been important. Yes, I wanted to mention, check out thisweek.org.uk tomorrow for Tony Gosling's programme in Bristol. That's right, thisweek.org.uk, Tony Gosling, the politics show in Bristol. He's brilliant. I do recommend that highly. Check out triggerwarning.tv. Go to Trigger Warning on YouTube for Hayden Hewitt's brilliant videos. My man, my pal Hayden Hewitt. Thanks to him for his support, by the way, this week. Have a fantastic weekend. You deserve it. All right, Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. I'll see you there. Don't be late.